Compliance Clarified, a podcast by Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence.
Hello, and welcome to Compliance Clarified, a podcast for risk and compliance professionals brought to you by Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence. Each week, we discuss news stories and topical issues from our journalists and analysts in the US, Europe, Asia, and Australia. I'm Lindsay Rogerson, Senior Editor in London, and today I'm joined by my Oslo-based colleague, Trond Bergen, our Senior Editor for European Financial Market Regulation. Welcome, Trond.
Hi, Lindsay. Thanks for having me on.
It's great to have you on, Trond. So, to kick off on what will be the final episode of Season 10, we're going to discuss what has been happening in the European Union vis-a-vis sustainability. It's fair to say that the United States has been receiving a lot of attention in the last few weeks after the Securities and Exchange Commission finally released its long-awaited ESG regulatory proposals. But while all that has been going on stateside, EU lawmakers have been adding to their own environmental regulations and directives. More on those a bit later, as what we're going to discuss first today is the European Central Bank. The speech this month by Frank Elderson, Vice Chair of the ECB's Supervisory Board, on banks' preparedness for climate change is the latest in a long run of such speeches from Elderson. Trond, can you please talk us through what Elderson wants European banks to be doing about their climate and environmental risks?
Thanks, Lindsay. Well, a lot, if you ask them. In short, he wants them to meet all of the ECB's supervisory expectations around climate and environmental risks by the end of this year. Now, that includes understanding how C and E risks, can we call them that, affect their business and strategic decisions, incorporating those risks into existing risk management frameworks, ensuring that they're reflected in the bank's assessments of its loan portfolios and adding them into the mix for stress testing banks' capital reserves. Now, these are not new. They were sort of set out in a guidance note in 2020, and the ECB has been sort of checking up on how banks have been doing since then through its annual supervisory review. And pretty much every year, it has reminded the sector that it's not been doing enough. Last year, for example, banks were required to have categorized and assessed C and E risks and integrated them into their risk management frameworks. That means basically managing C and E risks just like any other material risk they're exposed to. So it has noted there's clear requirements set out in the Capital Requirements Directive for banks to have a regular process for identifying all material risks, which the ECB says should also include climate and environmental risks. And by the end of 2024, that's this year, they need to be in full compliance with all of the ECB's expectations, or they could face enforcement action. Now, this, I guess, is where it gets interesting, seeing that there were about 9 months left. In last week's speech, Elderson said any banks that don't meet the deadline could face penalties such as daily fines or additional capital requirements being imposed on them. And note, this is not the first time he has said that. On the positive side, he said progress has been made across the board. While no banks currently meet all of its expectations, at least one of them is met by each bank at the moment. The banking sector has previously tried to push back a bit against all these expectations, and really, Elderson said that this showed it's not unreasonable, so there's no excuse to not be ready by the end of this year. Whether or not they will be, we will see beginning of next year.
Yes, no, thanks, Trond, for that excellent run through. I personally find Elderson's speeches very entertaining. He's been, as you say, very clear for many, many years about what banks are getting right, what banks are getting wrong. The ECB has issued extensive guidance, as you know. And I know that there's that end of 2024 deadline looming, but In your view, you know, how far are we off from the likelihood of a bank actually receiving one of these daily penalties that has been touted?
Well, it would be almost disappointing if they've flagged it so many times and actually not carry on with the threat. But I mean, daily penalties is one thing. Additional capital requirements could be another. But the one thing they've been equally clear about is as long as they're seeing progress, that's good. But if any bank were to decide that climate risk was not something it wanted to take into account, that could play into another category of the ECB supervision, that of the fit and proper assessments. Any board of directors for a European bank that doesn't take climate risk seriously will have to have its fit and proper qualifications reassessed, in the ECB's words.
That's quite some stick potentially then, as well, two huge sticks actually, fines and fit and proper. The biggest tools in the toolbox, really. Yeah, we shall look forward to the end of the year. We shouldn't say look forward, I guess.
I'm not sure how much the banks are looking forward to it, but yeah.
Thank you, Tron. That's been really helpful.
I'm Kim Vanell. Join me every morning for a roundup of what's happening at home and around the world. From the front line in Ukraine.
Extraordinary how these people adjust and even laugh when you take cover.
To the heart of US politics.
When Trump said that he expected to be arrested, it seems like he was trying to get ahead of the story.
We bring you everything you need to know in 10 minutes. For your essential daily briefing, follow Reuters World News wherever you get your podcasts.
So what we're going to discuss now, as I promised at the top, was a quick run through of the recent wave, and it is a wave of EU sustainability-related legislative files that have been ticked off in the last few weeks. Now, it is important to say up front that these are economy-wide regulations and directives, so they're not just aimed at financial services firms. But what I'll try to do as I go through is pick out why they matter to the financial services sector. So first up, we have a couple of directives which interchangeably are referred to as the anti-greenwashing directive. Neither of them actually have that in their title. One is the directive on empowering consumers for the green transition. What this introduces is the idea of official sustainability labels. So the background to this is lawmakers were aware that there was sort of this huge proliferation of sustainable labels which didn't really have any robustness to them. And so now, if you're going to use a sustainability label, it actually has to be an official one. And they are currently working through what those will look like, and there'll be more details later in the year. It also links into what's called the repair directive, the right to repair directive. And this is important because this is kind of the EU's first stab at the circular economy, and that could potentially, you know, be a huge opportunity for funding and investment for banks and fund management firms in future. So that's, but obviously you have to be cognizant of the rules that are around that. And then we have the Green Claims Directive. Now what this one does is basically, I attended a press conference that the rapporteurs for this file held last week, and they were very, very clear that nobody forces companies in the EU to make green claims. So they said, you know, so they're not forcing anybody to do anything with this directive. However, if you make a green claim, you can't lie. And they both used the word lie multiple times throughout the press briefing. And so basically, you're not going to be able to claim anything in marketing or advertising literature in future if you cannot back it up with robust evidence. And so that is just something for compliance departments to wrestle with the marketing departments on there, and as we go forward. But specifically for financial services firms, what the Green Claims Directive does is it also introduces requirements for firms thinking about using carbon offsets. and referring to carbon offsets in their net zero transition or their net zero journey. So you can only use carbon offsets if they are compliant with the new certification for removals framework, which has also just been released by the European Commission. And so what that does, and this is why I'm highlighting it, is if we take a step back, to date, offsets have been of two types. You've had, at a high level, you've had removals and you've had avoidance. So the EU, with their framework, is now firmly backing the removals as opposed to the avoidance type of offsets. And then within the removals, you have two types again. At the highest level, you have the nature-based solutions and you have the sort of tech solutions, you know, sucking carbon dioxide out of the air with, you know, and that type of solutions. Now, the technology solutions, everybody agrees, while they have potential, none of them right now have the scale to do anything significant to redress and get us anywhere near net zero. So for the time being, it's going to be a lot of nature-based solutions that are around removals. And so there are a lot of financial service firms out there that are developing carbon market desks, et cetera, or, you know, reopening them, et cetera. So it's just, this is a really important area for firms, compliance teams to get their heads around. And so that's why I flagged that one. Then very quickly, we have two more. We have the Energy Performance of Buildings Directive. So background to this is buildings account for 36% of EU greenhouse gas emissions at present. And the directive basically says it's two things. There's a retrofitting element and there's also new buildings must be zero emissions from 2030. So again, this matters because I've been at several conferences over multiple years where I've heard the bank saying we are desperate to fund green mortgages, but there's no incentive for homeowners or construction firms to do this, and so this is going to help drive that whole funding block potentially. And the other thing here is for insurers. Again, I was at an event recently where some green builders, I guess, sorry, I don't know, it's probably I don't mean to use that term flippantly, but they were saying they were having difficulty getting their finished buildings insured because some of the materials, the sustainable materials that they were using hadn't been okayed yet by the insurance industry. Now, some of the insurers in the audience kind of dismiss this, but there's a piece of work that will need to go on there for the insurance sector. And so that's why I'm raising that. Then finally, we have the Industrial Emissions Directive. Now, this is kind of the polluters pays directive. It's about rules to reduce air, water and soil pollution, and these will kick in from like 2026. So the reason I'm flagging this one is, as we have seen with the oil and gas producers, the banks and that fund them are increasingly ending up on the wrong side of litigation if they're not taking steps to ensure that the firms their loan book, you know, is pollution free, and likewise in investment managed asset owners. And so I'm just flagging that again there for financial services firms to be aware that that is coming down the line.
Thanks, Lindsay. That is quite a lot. Now, this being an election year, both in Europe and in several EU member states, even local elections here and there in many member countries, might that influence in any way these legislative proposals, directives and regulations, or prevent them from being passed?
Most certainly, Trond, and we have already seen examples of tinkering and watering down various legislative files that have come through. We've also seen examples of particular sectors benefiting from their robust, shall we say, actions. So for example, I heard one fund manager say very recently that he wished that the investment sector had tractors that they could literally park on the lawn of European parliaments, as the farmers have done, because the farmers have actually done very well out of their recent round of protests. The environment, less so. So, for example, the energy efficiency directive that I mentioned just a minute ago, it has an exemption for all agricultural businesses. And also in the latest negotiations around the common agricultural policy revisions, there has been some sort of watering down of biodiversity and soil erosion elements there, which the reason that's significant and the reason this fund manager was raising it is the nature-based solutions and protecting nature as part of that net zero and that whole piece is, it's very hard for them to have these discussions with their portfolio firms if the regulations are moving and the policy is changing at whim by lawmakers who are facing a ballot box. And so that's a key thing there. We've also seen thresholds increased for CSRD, that's the Corporate Sustainable Reporting Directive. So the points at which those directives kick in have gone up from, I think, 20 million to 25 million. And also pertinent to that is we've seen a pushback on when sector-specific rules for reporting. So at the moment we have general reporting rules, the sector-specific ones have now been pushed back a couple of years as well. So so we are definitely seeing politicians thinking, am I going to get re-elected? You know, let's do this. But the general trend, that said, is still forward. But the, for example, the decision on the European Sustainable Reporting Standards, that is going to make it hard for investment firms to get relevant data that they will need to fund the transition and fund the companies that are going to do better at the transition. The next one I want to pick up is the CS3D or CS Due Diligence Directive, to give it its proper name. Depending on who you talk to at the moment, this has either been killed, dealt a death knell blow, or it's just limping home and it might survive to be resurrected after the European parliamentary elections. So this was the supply chain. Basically, it would require firms to certify that their supply chain didn't have human slavery in it and amongst other things. And so it was apparently killed after France tried to up the size of companies that would be captured by it from 500 to 5,000. But then you hear different things from different people. I've heard from Italian MEPs that it was killed in some kind of deal with the packaging directive, which we still haven't seen the final version of yet. Yeah, so that one, who knows what will happen. But it is important to say that even though that may be dead, a pan-European due diligence directive may be dead for some time, Germany, France, Belgium is considering one. They all have their own supply chain due diligence directives, which are arguably tougher than the version that the EU is planning on putting in place. So that's worth noting. And then the other one that we've seen some watering down on is the deforestation regulation. So this is the regulation which, for a whole group of commodities, if you are bringing them into the EU or products made from them, then you have to certify that they came from a deforestation-free areas. So the regulation is still going ahead, but we were supposed to have a list of low, medium and high risk countries from the EU by the end of this year. That is now not going to happen. What instead, everybody is going to be put in the same middle category. So everyone's going to be standard. And so, I mean, obviously, we know the areas in the world that are already at very high risk of deforestation. So, yeah, it's a bit disappointing that they have not been called high risk from the off, but that may happen in future. Yeah, because there's, I mean, basically there's a lot to get planning for compliance to start planning on, to start ensuring that the rest of the mapping and, you know, briefing the relevant people in throughout their organizations on what needs to get done by when. Okay, that's it for this week's Compliance Clarified and for this series. We will be back mid-May. Your feedback is important to us, so please give us a rating on your podcast platform of choice, or you can get in touch directly. Our contact details are in the show notes. For more information about regulatory intelligence, please search Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence or check the show notes for a link. And all that remains for me to do is thank Trond for joining me today and for taking us through the ECB's requirements. Thanks, Trond.
Thanks for having me on.
Compliance Clarified, a podcast by Thomson Reuters Regulatory Intelligence.